Hi guys, I'm André Villas-Boas, listening to Echoes of Glory. And don't forget, whatever happens, the future's bright, future's lily white. Come on, you Spurs.
Hello and welcome to Echoes of Glory. I'm AST.
I'm Rob.
Hi mate, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. Not too bad. Yeah, as we said earlier, it's only sport, isn't it?
It's only sport. Just for context, recording Sunday, as usual, recording Sunday night. I'm assuming, did you watch the United-Liverpool game?
I did. Well, I watched half the second half and extra time, to be honest.
You caught a lot of the good stuff as well. I don't know how
a lot of the good stuff.
Man United won that one. Tell you what made me sad was watching Christian Eriksen come on and not really do anything. Like, he's 32. He should be in the peak of his career. I think if he'd stayed with us... Obviously, he's had his death moment, and feel sorry for him there. He should have just stayed with us and just done it.
I think he's an absolute miracle that he's playing, isn't he? I mean, how can you have that happen to you and not, you know, lose a little bit of your edge or a little bit of, I don't know, something that kind of makes these guys elite? I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it is sad to see him a shadow of the player that he used to be, because if he'd have stayed, I suspect we would have all been spared Lo Celso.
Yeah. Well, let's go on to yesterday. Yesterday we lost to Fulham in what is essentially the biggest shit show since Sanja's been here, I think, it's fair to say. Where does that come from? Was it arrogance? Because everyone was off it. I'm talking Udogi. I'm talking Sarr. Madison was pretty poor, just giving the ball away in the middle all the time. There was no good performances yesterday, I didn't think.
It just smacks to me of same old Tottenham, really, kind of believing their own press. And by press, I mean the media.
Yeah.
And just sort of strolling up, turning up at Craven Cottage and just thinking, oh, well, you know, we thumped Villa last week. We're absolutely a shoo-in for top four. We can stroll it. And, you know, in the Premier League, firstly, you absolutely can't do that. And secondly, it's Tottenham. You can never do that. And I was absolutely gutted yesterday, I had to say. I know, as I was saying to you earlier, I think, say you're a Liverpool fan tonight, right? Obviously, you just lost to your biggest rival in their ground, quarterfinal of the Cup. There's no doubt that you'll be devastated by the loss, but at the same time, kind of Liverpool played okay. It was a great game, you know, flip of a coin type thing, right? Last minute goal is what it is. But for Tottenham yesterday to go there and just basically kind of try and stroll through the game, I thought it might be really unfair. That's what I thought. Not turn up, terrible attitude, bad motivation. You know, it's not acceptable for Tottenham trying to get into the top four to go and lose 3-0 at Fulham. I'm sorry. But that's just not acceptable. And those are the losses, I think, that are some of the worst ones because they're so worrying. They've got 2 weeks now without a game. And I don't know, what does a loss like that say about really underneath the kind of fluffy, glittery surface about the mentality of that team when they're up against it in a tough game? You know, really... You know, the top teams, they don't go to Fulham and lose 3-0. So I might be being really unfair. I know that they're a new team. I know that they're on a journey to be whatever they're trying to be. And I thought Angie's press conference afterwards was in part quite confusing and in part kind of, you know, just sort of saying that you're going to get days like this. And I kind of get that, but I don't know. But yesterday just felt like it was a really unnecessary shit show.
It was all the bad sides of everything that we've got, wasn't it, really? Where we saw the good stuff against Villa and we saw the bad side. And that's what annoys me, you know. We're not a team that loses to the ones above them and then beats everyone below them and sort of maintains position that way. We'll beat Villa in a game that changes our season and then lose to Fulham in a game that flips it back for me. That's the frustrating part. It's arrogance to think that we can go to Fulham, we can go to any Premier League club and beat them, but we should be giving a better performance and we should be beating Fulham. I'm still not over going out of the FA Cup to Fulham. I know that was against penalties and we did beat them 2-0 at our place, but we've got to show more stones than that. And now, you know, you have a look at Liverpool, I'm not the biggest fan. I don't think they've got the greatest squad, but they've got, they lose half their squad and they go and have a great draw against City. And they, you know, they play well against Man United and they bring on a team and there's just more cohesion, more humility maybe about the job that needs to be done. And I know that they just lost, but it just seems that we're not at that elite level yet, that we're not a mentality monster yet. And at this, you know, I'm still not 100% sold on Ange.
Oh, really? Way,
yeah. I just, he's a plan A manager. And Conte was plan A. Mourinho was plan A. No plan B. And that's my problem. And while I love the point about we've just got to build. Yeah, but we can also not lose to Fulham. We can also, it can't just all be about solidly long term. We can't just all put our money in building the brand. We have to achieve results in the short term as well.
Yeah, and also I agree with you about everything you just said. Other than that, I don't know. I'm not very humble, ASD, but I do think that Tottenham should roll down to Fulham and expect, you know, if I've got an away ticket there, I'm expected to see them win. I'll be honest, because it's Tottenham, and maybe I'm just delusional, but I just think that we're a bigger, better team than them, and we shouldn't be getting thumped by them. But anyway, but in terms of the long-term planning thing, I mean, you're right that it can't just be all about long-term planning. But Ange, historically, if you look at his career, he's not a long-term manager in the sense that Klopp is kind of now on his second evolution of the team. They're playing completely differently, but he's been there for 7 years. Ange has never, as far as I'm aware, done a kind of 7, 8, 9 year stint anywhere. I don't think he has, but I have a quick look. While we're talking, but he sort of tends to come in, doesn't he, and does 2, 3 years in whatever country, whatever league he's in, and then he moves again. And that's, he's had success, obviously, and he's ambitious, which probably dictates some of that. But I suspect it's also partly dictated by the fact that he doesn't evolve his style of play. So he comes in, he injects a style of play, he gets a bit of success out of that, and he's got sort of 2 or 3 seasons to do it, and then he moves. But in the Premier League level, which I think is clearly elite football, elite sport, if you look at all of the really successful teams, firstly, they can evolve the way that they play, and secondly, they evolve. And so it's going to be really interesting, I think. I'm certainly, you know, I'm a big fan of everything that he's doing to that club, and you can see the way that they're coached, other than on Saturday, that he's clearly, him and his team are having an incredible impact on the pitch, off the pitch, around the place, the fan base, everything. Like, it's, that is exceptional, I think, in terms of leadership. But it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, yes, he might have better players year two, okay, but by year two, all of those teams in the Premier League, particularly the top 10, 12 teams that are pretty elite sports teams, they will have figured out really how to play against Tottenham, and it will be interesting to see then how they get on next year. So, yeah, it's we're not mentality monsters, you're right, and I hate Conte for what he did to Tottenham, but he always used to talk about stability, and he used to talk about, you know, about all those things. And, you know, they surprised me on Saturday that they didn't kind of get their foot in the game as much as they did. But I guess everyone's had a bad day at the office, aren't they? That's what it is.
It's one game. It's a bigger game. It's a massive game for Fulham. It is what it is. You know, if you have a look at the long term, we're on the up. Still feels good at the club. We've got a few weeks to rest and just people go on holiday and just get back on it. I'll go to international break. I'm not too worried about it. Like, it's one of those ones where it's frustrating, it's stupid, you just move on. I'm interested to see what happens in the summer. I really am. Just because we haven't got a striker. Well, we've got Richarlison, we haven't got a striker. Werner, I'm getting less convinced that he should be there, purely because I love him. I think he's really a good person, but he can't hit the target, and he's taking the space that someone else could have. And I know 50 mil isn't very much money, and he seems to be really good. He seems to be very fast, but we can't have loads of fast players that can't finish. We need a bit of quality up there. So a Manuel Solomon, who knows where he is at the moment? Like, you haven't seen him around. He just seems to be it all the time. So, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, Usain Bolt's very fast, mate, but I don't know that I'd necessarily pick him to play for Spurs. I mean, Werner, I'm not a fan of Werner. He's not as good Lucas Moura, I think. All the frustrations of Moura, kind of, you know, quick dribbles, no end product. I there have been flashes, particularly on the assist side with Werner, but you know, I know he scored a few games in his last four games, but I'm sorry, if you're going to play in that front four and you are not a confident finisher, and it's not that he's on a bad run, I mean, he has not been a confident finisher for six seasons, then I don't see him as being a Tottenham forward. And getting back to the Postecoglou stuff, so if we discount the coaching the Australia under-17s, under-20, et cetera, et cetera. So we go from 2009. So he did a year at somewhere called Whittlesea Zebras. Yeah. There you go.
Big team.
I'm not belittling any of these.
Of course not.
I've not heard of them. 2000, he did 3 years at Brisbane Roar, who are quite a big team, aren't they, in the Aussie League, I think. Then he did a year at Melbourne Victory. Then he did he did one cycle as Australian national coach, so 13-17, 4 years. Then 3 years in Japan, 2 years at Celtic, and now he's at Tottenham. So his record would suggest that he doesn't evolve the way that he plays. He takes the way that he plays to different teams. That would be my observation. But what do I know?
What do you think of Dragosin?
So it's obviously he's only played 1.5 games if you discount the 10 minutes that he's had here and there. I think it's extremely well. So I think two things. Firstly, it's extremely difficult to come in and replace a player like Mickey van der Ven if you don't change the way that you play. So Tottenham are set up and designed in a manner that is absolutely made for someone, a unique kind of sports specimen like Mickey van der Ven, who can run 100 meters in, you know, 3.5 seconds. He's perfect for them. But obviously he's a complete freak in the sense that, you know, anyone that's been to the games, I know I've said this before, when you're there in person, you see him sprint back. It is a mind-blowing experience that something that big can move that fast. It's just weird, right? And so they are designed for him. And then when they don't have him, I think it's really difficult to be able to come in and just adapt. Ben Davis seemed to do a pretty good job at it when everybody was out at the beginning of the year and at the end of last year, but equally they were sort of playing four fullbacks across the back, weren't they, I guess. So I really want to kind of call that out, but he looks to me, outside of those limitations, which I think are reasonable, to be a really solid, kind of really decent centre-back. I think it's, you know, he looks like a good buy. But what I thought was quite interesting when I was watching the game yesterday is I didn't get the sense, it's not necessarily about him necessarily as an individual, but I didn't get the sense that the team trusted the way that they played without that pace at the back. And he's by no means the slowest centre-back I've ever seen. He's not Gary Mabbutt running back, but they sort of seem to not, they were kind of a little bit unsure of themselves on the press, I thought, because they knew that they didn't have this kind of Bugatti at the back to kind of make up any shortfall. And so those little marginal things can make a really, really big impression on the team. And so the team are going to have to figure out, I think, how they're going to trust him and trust the defence without that pace in it, and figure out how they're going to play, and they're going to have to compensate for it, because for sure, you know, Postecoglou is not going to get the back line to drop back 5 yards or, you know, maybe kind of try and bolster the midfield a little bit. You know, they're going to have to adapt. So I think a lot of pressure on him, considering he hasn't played. He's got to convince the team that he can hold it there, and he's also, you know, going to have to adapt to being able to sprint back. And I just hope that his hamstrings don't give in.
Yeah. He's a young man. He's 22. I have full faith. I don't know. I love a centre-back. I love Joe Roden. He looked like he could spray a ball around, like he could pass. I'm not worried about him. Nelson. If you're talking slow centre-backs, Ryan Nelson's the one for me.
I remember that signing. That was a low moment, that.
I can see the point. It was there to fill a gap, a bit like Gallas when that happened. But
he wasn't he like 37 when they bought him or something. So he was basically he was just a really solid lad for Blackburn, wasn't he? But should never have been at a club like Tottenham, and was also about to retire. Unless I'm slightly mistaken by that.
Yeah, I mean, he must have been. I was listening to the Stephen Corker episode of the official Tottenham Hotspur podcast, which, if you haven't listened to, is the only other Tottenham podcast worth listening to, give or take. And he was talking about the time when he was smashed and he was on holiday somewhere, and his agent called up and said, you know, you've signed for Liverpool. And he was like, what are you talking about? That must have been what it was like for Ryan Nelson. He's like,
yeah.
You've got a year's deal at Tottenham Hotspur.
You're like, no, I'm about to retire. No, you're not. You're going to go and play at Tottenham and be shit.
I only made 5 appearances for us, but it felt like a lot more.
Oh, man. It was bad.
Scored a goal for us in the National Cup, apparently. I know, 8 appearances, but I cannot remember that at all. Cool. I don't know if you've been seeing, but that Lucas Bergvall, you know, the guy we bought in January.
Yep.
He's been doing some good stuff, scoring some nice goals. But have you seen about his brother? Apparently, when we signed him, we now have a special relationship with the team that we bought him from, which is called Djur Garden, I believe. And he'll come and be with us on July the 1st. And so we'll send young players over there, and they'll come over here and play with us, and we'll play friendly with them. And his brother Theo Bergvall got an injury, and they weren't happy that his team. Djur Garden weren't happy with the diagnosis. So Spurs immediately said, yeah, come over, come see our specialists, and the club seemed really happy. That's some of the nice stuff you don't really get to hear about very much.
No, and I think it's really important, particularly in the way that some of the clubs and teams are structuring themselves now, that Tottenham undertake these sort of partnerships, I guess you could call them.
Yeah.
With lots of teams. I mean, a lot of, you know, the Chelsea's and the City's are going and buying teams. And Man United, I suppose, are now part of a conglomerate of teams, are they? Now that Ineos support them, I don't know. I'm so confused by all that crap. This feels like a much nicer way to go about doing things. As long as it's not like the partnership, but it won't be, I suppose. Do you remember when we sold Bale?
I really remember
to Real Madrid,
that.
Yeah. And they announced that we were about to embark on a special relationship, weren't we? Which you could argue we did, because we got Van der Vaart back, didn't we? And we got who else came? But we seem to mostly only sell then players.
Van der Vaart was pre Bale. There was something there.
Oh, was he pre Bale?
Yeah, because they played together in the Champions League, didn't they?
Oh yes, that's right. He was pre Bale. You're right. So in that case, then we got nothing out of it. So we entered into a special relationship. But in that instance, we were the Norwegian club, and Real Madrid was Spurs.
Reminds me back, and do you remember when we sold Berbatov to Man United, we got a player back, a striker, who just went down the divisions after we loaned him, do you remember? Campbell.
Yeah, Fraser Campbell.
Didn't go, I'm going to have a look now.
He was like the Dane Scarlett for Man United at that time, wasn't he?
He's retired
Retired.
Yeah.
So it'd be like Tottenham going to United and saying that we want to buy Rashford and we'll send you Scarlett.
Exactly what it was.
No disrespect to Dave Scarlett, obviously, great young lad, but it's not Marcus Rashford yet.
He played for England once, Fraser Campbell, under Stuart Pearce. But really? It was a proper like injury time thing. It was a proper friendly, just loads of young players coming on, but fair play. I'll tell you what, the only time I've ever experienced anything like playing for my country was when I did Ironman. So for Ironman Wales, the way they do, you should Google it. If you have a look at Ironman Wales National Anthem, you start on the beach in Tenby. And I've got a name thing on my chest with my name and the Welsh flag on it, so it's amazing. But you've got 4,000 people on the beach. It's 10 to 7 in the morning. You know you've got a big thing ahead of you. The sun is rising. It's stunning. And then all along the cliffs are your friends and family. So it's like a film set. And then they play the Welsh National Anthem. well, just before you start off, and honestly, I've never been so proud. I felt like I was representing my country, and I can't imagine what it'd be like to be like, I'm playing for my country. I've been working all my life, and just to pull on that shirt, even if it was just the once, fair play to the lad.
It makes you wonder how Ben White can make the decision that he's just made for England, doesn't it? Where he's I mean, I know that they're trying to spin it and PR it, but he's basically just turned around and said, you know, I don't want to be selected because I kind of don't want to be a bit part player, basically.
So this falls into the same category as people who retire from the national team. If you're the best person for that position, you shouldn't be able to turn it down. I don't understand that. Like,
I don't understand it. I'm also just looking. So you start off at Goscar Rock, is that right?
Yeah, so it's an Australian exit, they called it. So it's a 2.4-mile swim in Ironman, but it's quite hard to find 2.4 miles of open water. So you do 1.2 miles, so you do a triangle, which is actually really hard because you go out against the tide. You swim then adjacent or parallel to the beach, but the tide is trying to push you back, so you're going in a triangle, and then you come back towards the beach. You get out, run around a big inflatable thing, then you go back and do exactly the same thing again.
And you do this for fun, do you?
Mate, I'm very happy to talk about this. So I did the 100k run. So I ran from London to Brighton.
For fun?
Yeah, it was honestly one of the best days of my life. Then I did three half Ironmen. So I did one in Marlow, one in Brecon called Brecon Man. That was harder than full Ironman. I did 10k. I did a 42-minute 10k, which I'm super proud of. I've never been able to get close to that. And then I did Ironman all within 5 months. My body was broken after this. But I did this. So I started Ironman. And you've got to imagine 4,000 people swimming in the sea. People are literally climbing over you as you're in the sea. They're pulling your goggles off. They're kicking you in the face. Like, it's a fight. Like, I'm not overemphasizing this. Really hard. Like, if you Google Ironman Wales 2014, because it's 10 years since I did it, you can see the swim. And the waves were 6 foot high, so you were just going up and down. Like, they almost cancelled it because it was so bad. And I'm swimming, and your tongue swells up because you're just salt water is just in your mouth all the time.
Is it because of all the sewage, is it? Or
No, it's a beautiful part of Wales.
I didn't mean anything about Wales, just the sea. Generally.
No. So when I did the one in Marlow, I got super ill because I was in the Thames for my swim there. Nice. I had my tongue swollen up, boom, like this. And I started vomiting blood. And I was a bit like, I am so stressed here. So I literally stopped and mushroomed. And I was like, should I quit? Because no one will think any less of you. Like, because you've just done all this other, you've run 100 kilometers, you run 62 miles, you've done a half iron. And you struggle through those, like, no one would blame you. And I just was a bit like, I'm here, I might as well do it, I've just got to do it. And then I knew from that moment that I was never gonna stop, get out.
So you're a tall and gorgeous Welshman, but you're also like a gladiator, like, mate. Maximus Decimus Meridius, like. And again, I'm just gonna ask the question again, I'm sorry for repeating myself, but you do this for fun,
honestly. So crossing the finishing line, so it took me, average time you should be aiming for an Ironman is 12 hours. They say for Wales it's 13. I did it in 13 and a half. I finished with a broken foot and a torn groin muscle. I literally had to go under a general anaesthetic to get it fixed. I had 3 tears in my muscle because I just overtrained. And the training was amazing. And the getting to the finishing line was joyous. And then as soon as I crossed the finishing line, I felt nothing. Insane. Like, left when it was dark, finished when it was dark, running, swimming, cycling the whole time. And I just didn't feel anything when I finished across the line. They gave you some really rubbish pizza, and then I vomited it all the way home to Cardiff. Like, it was rough. But honestly, I would do it again. Emma says I'm not allowed just because the training kills me. But honestly, it's the best thing.
I'm going to take your word for that.
Anyway.
Okay. I mean, I'll be honest with you, and I don't want you to think any less of me for saying this, but it sounds horrendous.
Yeah. It's one of those ones where I quite like the pain. You know, if my therapist was here, she'd be like, this is just a pain thing. This is a self-harm thing. And it probably is what it is. But I love the discipline.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't have to run 200 miles to self-harm, mate, do you? I mean, just, do you know what I mean?
Do it here for free. Obviously, you shouldn't
go, do that. Go and watch Spurs away at Fulham. Cheaper and much quicker.
This was at the time when I was... Do you know what? I watched a Spurs Fulham game. So when I was training for the 100K, I went out and one of my training runs, we did 30 miles around the Downs, South Downs. And I came, we had Chinese all you can eat for lunch. I threw up in the toilet, threw up blood in the toilets again, and then came to and watched Spurs Fulham. And it was really hard because we were in block 35 in the old White Hart Lane and I couldn't stand because my legs were knackered. So that was really awkward.
Those personal endeavour, like, I'm just in awe of hearing you talk about it. I'll be honest, something that I am too fat, weak and mentally unstable to be able to possibly do anything like that. So when I hear anyone talk about it, I'm in awe of their mental resilience and also overwhelmed by their lunacy.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, I don't know, I'd be like, there's so many things I could do. Eat, drink wine.
Yeah.
You'll live longer than me, mate, probably. That's probably it.
I could eat twice as much as I normally would because I was burning 2,000 calories extra a day. Yeah, it was amazing. I'll tell you why it started. So me and my mate, Si, my running partner, we were looking for the hardest thing. Why did it start? I'll tell you why it started. He was getting fat. I had broken ribs because when I lived in Ealing, I used to get off early at Acton and walk back, and I walked past a room, like a community hall, and there was noises. So I put my head around and they were doing judo in there. So next week I went and started doing it. Then we moved from Ealing to Welwyn Garden City, and I had that, you know, I'm not short of confidence sometimes. So I walked in and I was like, I'm going to fight the biggest guy there. The guy was as tall as me. I'm 6'2", but he was like round like this. So I could stand behind him and he wouldn't be able to see me, but it was solid. And I didn't really know that when you fight, you're meant to tap just all the time, tap when they get you, when they pin you down or whatever. And he should have known not to hurt me, but I wasn't giving in. And he had me in a hold and he was squeezing and squeezing. And he snapped my rib in two places. And again, I was coughing up blood. And I was like, oh, what? My eyes were streaming. I was crying because it was so much pain. And I was like, why are you so strong? He was the British powerlifting champion. So he was the strongest guy in the UK as a black belt. And he threw me around. So then me and my mate Si needed something to do. So we found Tough Mudder. And it was a piece of piss. And we were like, no, we need to find the hardest thing. And then we found the 100K. And then I figured if I'm going to do 100K, I might as well do Ironman. So here we are.
And you've got your medals.
Got my medals. I'll send you a picture. They're good ones. They're good ones. 100K one you would miss. But the Ironman one is just a solid, massive dragon.
Mm. When you hear stories like that and you think about the commitment that people make, and makes kind of football seem sort of quite a soft, not terribly important sport, doesn't it, really? And it's also deeply annoying when you see people fall over and they get their ear brushed and they're rolling around like, what? When did all of that really come into the game? Was it the start of the Premier League era when? Because I basically think that people have been rolling around feigning to be injured for as long as I've been watching football. But when I then watch some of the really old games, that some games that I was even at as a kid and I don't really remember. I know I was there, but I don't really remember anything about the game. You know, even in the early 90s, the game was the players were much tougher than they are now. It's the whole rolling around thing is horrendous, isn't it? When all the foreign players started coming into the game?
If I was a Brexit voter, it would be like bloody foreigners. But I think the game's got a lot quicker. And
yeah.
I think the players are more finely tuned athletes. And I think it's much easier to knock someone over now. You know, they're not as just fat, and so it's easier to get injured, I feel. And also as refereeing got lighter, or as people were realizing that people were taking liberties against them, that they had to get referees to notice, then maybe it's the right thing. But then I have a look at Bruno Fernandes, and it's quite cowardly sometimes the way he plays.
Yeah, strategic, I think. I think it's a lot of it's to do to your point about the fact that they're running so far. I heard a stat the other day that the average distance run in the 2021-22 season was 11K, and now it's 13K. So they're running 2K more a game. So they're hitter. The game seems like it's more intense, more and more high lines, all that stuff. So I just think there's more and more strategic breathers, aren't there? You know, opportunities just to break up a little bit of momentum in the opposition, which is fine. But also, you're knackered, aren't you? Like, I'm just going to lay down there and have a break. Equals all the, you know, more injuries. There's more statistically more hamstring injuries this season than there's been for the last five seasons or something.
Right?
And I don't think combined. I just think over the last five seasons, there's already more this season than there has been across those seasons.
Interesting.
Purely down to high lines, sprints, big players playing centre back that aren't used to sprinting, now sprinting. So the game's just becoming more physically demanding. So I just think you're going to get far more of these strategic kind of rest periods, and Symbians and blue cards and that nonsense is going to only add to that, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a big loop from an Iron Man, but there you go.
Yeah. I say we have had an excellent result for Tottenham Women. They beat Leicester. So now they're 6 points ahead of Leicester, which is really good. And the semi-final against Leicester is on the 14th of April. Tickets go on sale on the 25th. I'm going to take the whole family. It's like 15 quid for an adult and a lot cheaper for kids. And they moved it from Leighton Orient, I think, to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So
yeah, me and the kids are going to go. And the penalty shootout as well, which we should have spoken about last week, I think. And we just got slightly waylaid by the Villa game. But it was a fantastic game, that, and the shootout was really, really exciting. It was really, really good. So yeah, really exciting times for the women's team. They seem to be kind of gelling a bit better and progressing, don't they? Every season getting a bit better. It's really, really, in terms of the league finish positions and challenging for honour, so exciting, I think. All of the other teams at Tottenham as well are all kind of starting to do the same thing, aren't they? Like the young lads, under 23s, under 18s, all doing really well as well as that. So, good times. But that game should be great at the new stadium.
Yeah,
the semi-final should be really exciting.
Just get loads of people in there as well. I think there'll be loads of people there. So we should try and all buy tickets in the same place.
Yes.
The final thing, because I've done another quiz, the Players Tribune does the letters from players to fans. There's some brilliant ones out there. And did you see the Jan Kulusevski one?
I did.
It's good, isn't it? It really humanizes them.
It is really good. I sort of always have a little laugh at those things, and maybe it's me, but I find that those things always get released at the exact moment that your form starts to dip. Yeah. And there's no doubt in the last two or three games he's just not quite been at it, which happens, doesn't it? It's the way he's still doing okay, but just not quite been at it. And then he releases this thing, and then all the comments on that I saw on Threads and X was all, it's a shame that you're, not sticking it out there on the pitch at the minute and all that, which I thought was unfair. But if anyone hasn't seen it, then please do go and see it. And I don't know, but if we're ever going to get any guests on here, then his sister Sandra, I mean, let's get her on.
Amazing, doesn't she?
She sounds a legend.
And just
basically constantly mugs him off, no matter how he does and how he plays. So he said that when he scored, he made his debut at the Etihad, his proper debut, and then he scored at the Etihad, and he was overwhelmed, and he got hold of his sister, and she was basically just reamed off all the things that he did in the game. And again, when they played in when Kane, the assist as well at the end, and she was like, I didn't like the way that you cut inside. She just sounds an absolute character and someone that everybody should have in their life. So she sounds great. The second most famous Sandra in Tottenham's history.
Right.
On the subject of Sandra, sorry to cut you off, but from Redknapp, did you see his horse one?
No.
Have a go. Was it called Have a Go, Harry? Or Give Him Out? Or something like that.
Yeah.
At Cheltenham this week, Redknapp's horse one. And he was interviewed after the race, and obviously he said, I'm overjoyed, it's a dream of mine to have a runner at Cheltenham, but he said, I'm in trouble now, because He said, my wife Sandra, she thinks I only own one horse.
Oh God.
And it's not, and this isn't the name of the horse that she thinks I own. So they said, oh, how many horses do you own, Harry? And he said, 24. Oh, I love Red Map.
That man, he's 77 years old now.
Unbelievable, yeah. I know.
What a character.
What a character, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Anyway, sorry, mate.
Well, so I got some feedback on the quiz I did last week. Former co-hosts of the show, basically slagging it off.
Oh, really?
The words one, but they loved the geography one. I thought the words one, they thought the rhyming bits were a bit dodge. I completely disagree, but Van, for you, I've gone more geography because that's what he liked. So I've got some more geography questions. There's no there's no expectations that you'd know any of these, but I thought it was...
I can tell you, I'm very unlikely to know any of these.
I mean, most of it is guesswork.
Go on then.
I mean, I can save it if you want.
No, go on.
Oh, okay. So ignoring the English lads, which two players were born in cities that are closest together? So there's two answers to this. There's two that are from the same country. And there's, if you had to have two unique countries, you couldn't just have two lads from, you know, Brazil. It's not the Brazilians either, because Brazil's bloody massive and they're miles away from each other. And this is also according to AI.
Porro and Gil.
So Spain is Spain, so Porro and Gil. So the two closest are the two Italians. So Udoggi was born in Udine and Verona for Vicario. And then if they had to be from separate countries, it's...
I don't know. Maybe one of the Italians.
It's the Northerners. So it's Mickey van der Ven from Eindhoven and then Hoiberg from Copenhagen. They're only 311 miles apart.
I think you might be extending my intellectual abilities here ever so slightly, ASD.
Fine, I might just talk to you about it then.
That's fine.
The furthest apart are Sun, who was born in Kronching, South Korea, which is in the north of the country, I learned today.
One of the South American boys.
Yeah, exactly. Is Emerson, yeah, who was born in Sao Paulo, bloody miles away.
Yeah, that is quite far. It's 12, even going the other way. Yeah, I suppose it would be.
Yeah, even going. And then the person born furthest away from Ange, where Ange is from, which is Melbourne, is actually...
Van der Ven, maybe?
Frederick Falstone from Hexham, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. And then it's really hard to go, what's interesting geography questions. Then I decided to have a look at who was born in a city the highest in metres above sea level. And it's actually quite interesting. Emerson Royale is born nearly a kilometre above sea level, which seems quite high to me. Sao Paulo is 798 metres above. And then the next one is Porro, which is only 264. Like, these are big differences.
And that's then why our legs don't run so hard.
Yeah. And interestingly, Papa Matasar is from Fiaroye from Senegal.
Water, was he?
He's only 3 meters above sea level.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And then the highest proportion of vegetarians for each of the cities these people are from, Manor Solomon, Kefar Sabah, has got 20% vegetarians.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it does really make sense. Then Bissouma from Issia in Ivory Coast, 1% vegetarian.
Yeah, well, it's probably, you know, makes sense, doesn't it, I guess?
Yeah.
Think about the local cuisine.
This is true, yeah. I'm going to stop. I'm not even sure if it's bullshit or not, you know? So what's interesting is the official animals.
I hope it is.
Yeah, the official animals of countries. Do you know what the official animal of Scotland is? We haven't got a Scottish player, but it always surprises me.
Stag.
Unicorn.
Well, it's close.
Yeah, there it goes. Two horns instead of one. That's it.
A unicorn.
Right?
So the Scottish have got a imaginary creature as their national. That says a lot.
Yeah, it does. See about Harry Kane?
With his ankle. Which one was it? Left or the right? Was it the... No.
I don't know. But because do you see him run into the post as well?
Yeah.
Not great. Not great.
Look bad. I mean, well, he needs to be fit for the Arsenal game, but he especially really needs to be fit for June, doesn't he?
Really, really does.
He really does, yeah.
Right, we've got Luton in 2 weeks. I'm actually flying to Copenhagen that day for a week. And we've got West Ham midweek as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to sort of assume that there's going to be a bit of a bounce for the Luton game. I think the worst thing that could happen actually is a 2 week gap, because you sort of lose all the anger in the team, don't you, I guess. But hopefully see a bounce for the Luton game. And then, as ever, the West Ham game is always a bit of a lottery.
Yeah,
they will be it will be very noisy. And, you know, hopefully they can go there. And it's the sort of atmosphere that this season they've actually done fairly well, you know. And so hopefully they can go there and use that energy to their advantage and go and stick one on the Hammers. I really hope so, because I'm honestly getting quite tired now of hearing West Ham fans
blow on
about the Nations or whatever it was, the cup thing that they won last year. You know, it would be nice just to give them a bloody nose, beat them and get back on track.
Yeah. We've only got 10 games left, and we have got the three games coming up soon, like Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool. Who have you got winning the league? Let me just remind you. So all three of them play 28 games. Arsenal and Liverpool are on 64 points each. Arsenal's goal difference is insane at 46. Man City, 1 point behind with the worst goal difference, interestingly.
I think Man City win the league.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think my gut instinct says that Arsenal, who are on an incredible run, it's all about momentum. All about momentum, and winning games 4-0, 5-0, 6-0 is great. But you can't win games 4-0, 5-0, 6-0. History tells you every week for 4 months, 3 months. And so they just feel like they're beginning to slow down on that momentum a little bit at the moment. And it's all about your run. If they were winning by those margins, kind of from now for the next 4 weeks, then I'd think maybe they can do it. I just think, again, they've gone a little bit early, and I just can't see City. I don't think City are going to lose again this year, because that's just, they know how to win games, get over the line. So they, you know, they do this too.
This City Arsenal game in 2 weeks is beyond big. It's massive. It's a proper Super Sunday. Then Villa, but then looking at, because they've got Real Madrid in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, but they go Palace, Madrid, Luton, Madrid. And 3 days later, Chelsea in the semi-finals, and then Spurs at some point as well. So, we're playing them the same day the FA Cup semi-finals. So that'll get postponed.
That'll move, but I think that'll move midweek, I reckon.
Yeah, but Arsenal,
I think they'll keep that. I don't think they'll push it late. I think they'll just push it back.
Yeah. But then Arsenal have got Brighton, Bayern, Villa, Bayern, Wolves, which is far less preferable than that. By a long way, I think
so. And also, I just think that because they're used to year after year being in that position, I just think a little bit like United used to be in the kind of late 90s. I just think that squad, they basically bumble around all year they'll be thriving on those five games. We'd be sitting there thinking, oh my God, but they're not bothered. They're like, bring it on. They've got 16, 17 world-class players that can rotate the squad. I don't know. I just think it's all about momentum. If City suddenly start losing a couple of games unexpectedly, then I might change my mind. But I just think that Arsenal have started sprinting for the line just a little bit too early. And I think just City just know how to get results. I think that they'll do it. I kind of hope that they call the league off. I don't really want any of them to win it, really.
No. My problem with Arsenal is just, it all seems to be on motivation and emotion. It doesn't seem to be like a system. It seems to be running on a wave of emotion, and as soon as negativity enters there, you can see them dropping off. Like, they could get hammered by Bayern. The last three results they've had against Bayern were 5-1, 5-1, 5-1.
It should be a good game, I think, the Arsenal Bayern game. But I mean, I think Rice has been a brilliant buy for them. I think he's been a real game changer for them, and to be honest, at 100 million quid, you kind of hope that he would be. But I do think he's been one of the buys of the season. He's been brilliant. But I don't know. Yeah, like you, I sort of don't sort of see that there's a kind of strategy for them just to get through. They're just kind of turning up, and they're also getting a bit arrogant, aren't they? And I thought the club were actually putting out social media stuff about Sheffield United, and they did go and smash Sheffield United. But I thought all of that stuff was quite, you know, unedifying and really not kind of right, really. So as fast as that arrogance creeps in, worry and fear can creep back in. So yeah. I'm sure that and also I just think Arteta's just he's just a bit weird, isn't he?
He's a prick. I can't stand him. I just don't feel like he could go to another club and be as successful. Like, it's Arsenal and City or nothing, and he's not going to be able to go to City after Guardiola. I can't wait to see who they get after Guardiola, like when that comes to an end. But Guardiola doesn't seem like he's going to be leaving anytime soon. He must be loving the fact that Klopp's going.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you think he's... I mean, Guardiola probably works 50% for 8 months of the season and then sort of ramps it up a bit towards the end, doesn't he? I mean, why wouldn't he? He's probably his highest paid manager in the world and he's working half late. I mean, fair enough. I'm interested to see what happens in Real Madrid. I wonder if Arteta has one eye on... You know, you've got the whole Alonso, Arteta, Madrid thing going on. Ancelotti, particularly if they lose to City, he'll probably, you know, I can see him leaving Real Madrid at the end of the season. And is that then Arteta's cue to go there, or does Alonso go to Madrid? And Madrid going to take a risk on Alonso? Not sure about that. So I think that whole merry-go-round is going to be quite interesting, and that will ultimately might have an influence on what, you know, Arsenal might be looking for a new manager, you don't know.
Yeah.
And obviously Liverpool are in the hunt for one as well at the moment. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Interesting times. Yeah.
All right, mate. Good times. Bit disappointing from Spurs, but not unexpected. It was going to happen at some point, I think. And here we are. It's Spurs. This is what we do.
It's what we do.
Then it's just football. Right, mate. Well, as always, thanks for your time. It's always a pleasure to see you and speak to him. And don't forget, the future's bright. The future's lily white. Come on, you Spurs.
I always thought there was very, very many people interested in football, and I always thought that football was a very important game, but I never realized until today just how important it is.
Whether the Wonder Boys of White Hart Lane are or are not the team of the century can't possibly be more than a matter of opinion.
Well, they're the finest team in Great Britain, and one of the best in the world.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur. The curve of the ball, the billow of the net, the beating of the trap and the picking of the lock, the swiftness of thought, the lightness of touch. We are Ginola, Greaves, Klinsmann. We are the collective gasp, the intake of breath, the flick, the trick, the 30-yard free kick. We are Hoddle, Mabbott and King. We are the lob, the chip, the dummy and the volley. We are the hat trick, the scissor kick. We are Bill Nick.
That is schoolboy's own stuff.
We are the outside of the boot, the inside of the net, and those seconds that last forever.
Van der Vaart to level it up. Raphael van der Vaart, 2-2. It's quite a game, isn't it always?
We are Jennings, Defoe, and Perryman. Glory past, glory future. What was, what is, what's next? We are Blanchflower, Ardiles, and Bale. We are about winning with a flourish. We are about winning with style. We are about the glory of the game. Daring to try, daring to risk, daring to dream. To dare is to do.